let them forget what the country progress.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. A Russian missile hit a hotel that United Nations staff often use in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia on Thursday evening, leaving one person dead and 16 wounded, according to Ukrainian officials. Among the 16 injured in the strike, four were children. It was the second strike on Zaporizhia in 2 days. In Russia, Russia launched its first mission to the moon in nearly 50 years on Friday, racing to land on the lunar South Pole before spacecraft from India gets there. The Russian lunar lander is expected to reach the moon on August 23rd, about the same time as the Indian craft, which was launched on July the 14th. Hawaii's governor says at least 53 people were killed in Maui's wildfires, and the death toll likely will continue to rise. Meantime, President Joe Biden says federal help is on the way.
I've ordered all available federal assets on the island, including the U.S. Coast Guard, the Navy Third Fleet, and the U.S. Army, to assist local emergency response crews along with the Hawaiian National Guard. We're working as quickly as possible to fight these fires and evacuate residents and tourists.
More than 1,000 structures were destroyed by the fires that are still burning in the town of Luhainu and surrounding areas. The governor told the Associated Press that Luhainu, with a few rare exceptions, has burned down, fueled by dry summer and strong winds from a passing hurricane. The fire started Tuesday and took Maui by surprise. So far, there have been no initial causes released by authorities on those wildfires in Maui, Hawaii. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also, on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Experts have some advice for people seeking to help victims of Hawaii's fires. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer has that story.
Philanthropy experts recommend giving to experienced organizations that are well situated to respond to a specific disaster, such as the American Red Cross or the Salvation Army. There can also be local organizations with deep ties to the community. Experts urge caution, however, in responding to appeals on social media for donations to individuals through apps like Venmo or Cash App. GoFundMe says they've taken steps to verify the identity of organizers and have collected those campaigns on a hub on their website. If you need a tax receipt, remember that only tax-exempt nonprofit organizations will provide a receipt needed by those who itemize their taxes to get the deduction. And experts urge patience, as it may take days, weeks, or even months to fully assess the extent of the damage. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Violence in Cape Town, South Africa appears to be worsening, AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
Violence in Cape Town appears to be worsening. A British man has been killed amid violent protests in the South African city of Cape Town after the vehicle he was riding in drove into the midst of some of the unrest. South African police say the 40-year-old man was sitting in the passenger seat and was shot in the head. Two other passengers and an infant were also in the vehicle. The protests in South Africa's second largest city began last week after a strike was called by minibus taxi drivers. The ongoing strike has had a devastating impact, with nearly half a million children missing school and tens of thousands struggling to get to work. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Niger's junta, that is, threatened to kill ousted President Mohamed Bazoum if the neighboring countries attempt any military intervention to restore his rule, according to two Western officials. ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, had given military leaders a deadline of this past Sunday to reverse the coup. Following the Sunday's deadline's expiration, the Nigerian military closed the country's airspace, citing that the threat of intervention as the reason. The military also pledged to defend the country from any foreign attack. And Iran confirming Thursday that it has transferred four American prisoners to house arrest in exchange for billions of dollars frozen in South Korea, the development that comes as Tehran, for months, has indicated it is open to a prisoner swap with Washington. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Everybody, Africa, welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS activates a regional force against Niger's military junta.
All diplomatic efforts made by ECOWAS in resolving the crisis have been defiantly repelled by the military leadership of the Republic of Niger. Order the deployment of the ECOWAS standby force to restore constitutional order in the Republic of Niger.
A political analyst says a peaceful resolution to the Niger crisis may still be possible. Aid donors provide $1.5 billion in assistance amid the humanitarian crisis in Sudan. There's early campaign violence in the lead-up to Liberia's October elections.
We have made clear that moving forward, we will use every means possible to protect the lives of our supporters and well-wishers, since the police has not been able to provide such protection for us.
And Human Rights Watch calls on South Sudan to punish soldiers responsible for last year's extrajudicial killings. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, on Thursday ordered the activation of the regional security forces to restore constitutional order in Niger. ECOWAS heads of state held a summit in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, their second since last month's coup in neighboring Niger Republic. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The meeting in Abuja on Thursday of ECOWAS leaders lasted more than 4 hours and took place behind closed doors. Leaders from 11 ECOWAS member states evaluated the regional bloc's position on the socio-political instability in Niger, where President Mohamed Bazoum was ousted last month. ECOWAS directed the Committee of the Chief of Defense Staff to immediately activate a standby regional force. The West African bloc also upheld measures taken against Niger's junta, including border closures, travel bans, and asset freezes on individuals undermining the restoration of constitutional order. Omar Aliou Touré is the president of the ECOWAS Commission.
All diplomatic efforts made by ECOWAS in resolving the crisis have been defiantly repelled by the military leadership of the Republic of Niger. Order the deployment of the ECOWAS standby force to restore constitutional order in the Republic of Niger.
It is the second meeting by the heads of state since July 26th, when soldiers from Niger's presidential guard seized power from Bazoum, the country's democratically elected leader, saying Niger was descending into economic and security chaos under his administration. Bazoum has since been held hostage. ECOWAS Thursday condemned his continued detention. ECOWAS also warned member states against taking actions that directly or indirectly hinder a peaceful resolution of the situation in Niger, saying there will be consequences. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu is also ECOWAS' chair. He said the road ahead will not be easy.
If we don't do it, no one else will do it for us. The road ahead will on that table have challenges, but I firmly believe that with our collective resolve, we can navigate these obstacles and chart a path towards lasting peace and prosperity for Nigeria.
West Africa is seeing a wave of military takeovers. The coup in Niger is the seventh in 3 years. On July 30th, ECOWAS issued a 7-day ultimatum to the military leaders to restore power to Bazoum, but the junta said it would not back down. The regional force has seen opposition to its threat to use military force in Niger, despite the slim chance of a diplomatic resolution to the political conflict. Mali and Burkina Faso last week pledged their support for Niger's junta and warned against any intervention by regional forces. This week, Niger's military leaders rejected meetings with delegates from the African Union and a high-ranking U.S. official. Nigerian security analyst Senator Irebu says ECOWAS faces a tough decision.
Failure to act in case of Niger may be the last boundary before the domino will fall, because there seems to be a trajectory. And Niger is just a neighboring country to Nigeria. And the fear is that if Niger get away with it, and it's a growing pattern, time will come other countries are feeling threatened already.
But Irebu says a military invasion will have severe consequences. Nigerian troops are expected to make up the bulk of an ECOWAS force. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A political analyst says he thinks a peaceful resolution of the Niger crisis may still be possible. But Ibrahim Khan says the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is also determined to stop the proliferation of coups in the sub-region. This comes as ECOWAS Thursday ordered a standby force to restore constitutional order in Niger. Khan tells me that even though the military junta has mobilized the population, it also realizes that there is little or no support in Africa for its coup.
It's quite interesting to see that in less than 1 month, ECOWAS met twice to discuss the situation of a particular country where the military have taken power over the civilian. This shows that ECOWAS is really keen to stop the proliferation of coup in the region, and also that there is a seriousness about really trying to find solutions that will respect not only the normative framework of the region, but also that will help the country to sort out its problem peacefully.
I think when we last spoke, you also mentioned this idea of diplomacy. Do you think diplomacy can work, or do you think ECOWAS has crossed the, what we call, I would say, the Rubicon with Thursday's declaration?
I think it can work. The fact that yesterday the president of the junta received the traditional leader of Nigeria, the emir of Kano, that shows that at least now they are more open to conversation with ECOWAS about the situation. I think they're also realizing that despite the fact that they've mobilized people in the country, they're mobilizing the military in the region, there is no support to their action in Africa.
Let's assume that ECOWAS decides to go ahead with the military intervention and the objective is to restore Bazoum to power. Wouldn't such operation put Bazoum's life in danger?
Well, probably his life is already in danger at the moment because he's in the hand of the military. But I have to also say that in Niger, you have more than 3,000 foreign troops in the country with a lot of equipment that will help to have intelligence on many, many things. A surgical intervention is still possible with the help of the American and the French. But I think ECOWAS is getting ready to put more pressure on the military, because I think if the military knows that people are ready at the border for any type of action and that they know that they don't have many, many supporters, you know, when you look at the size of the army, you look at the size of the country, it's quite difficult for the military to succeed in any circumstances. And what will happen in terms of action, if it happens, because I think that this military are really very people who also understand the language, the military language, so they will give up at the right time. And we will come back to the reality. It will come back to a system whereby if they can't reinstate Bazoum, they will organize election, they will do things that will help to return to constitutional order.
Ibrahim Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. In Liberia, the main opposition Unity Party is accusing the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, of instigating a violent attack that took place Thursday during its campaign event, leaving several Unity Party supporters injured. The CDC has denied its supporters disrupted and attacked opposition supporters. In a statement, the CDC said it was pre-approved to campaign on Thursday in two districts of the capital, Monrovia. Liberia votes on October 10 this year in presidential and legislative elections. Muhammad Ali is the official campaign spokesperson for the opposition Unity Party. He tells me that his party will respond in kind the next time it is attacked by supporters of the ruling CDC.
On Wednesday, which is August 9, the Unity Party campaign announced that a standard bearer was going to its campaign headquarters in Sinkor to announce the full campaign team. And in that vein, we also encourage our partisans to assemble and welcome our standard bearer at the party campaign's headquarters. To our utmost surprise today, when we got ready to go, there was a huge traffic. It was impassable. And later on, we were watching on online TV where supporters of President Weah, PDC party had gathered, and they began to attack our supporters. They did not stop there. They went as far as reaching our campaign headquarters and wounded some of our people. They attacked us. They beat some because we have planned, in accordance with the Farmington Declaration, not to engage in any form of violence. This is not the first time. On the opening day of campaign, President Weah's party took casket bearing the pictures of our standard bearer, former Vice President Joseph Boakai, which is in clear violation of the Farmington Accord that we signed to keep the peace. They attacked some of our supporters. They brutalized our District 9 Women Coordinator. The police were fully informed about our activities today. We did not see the police officers until the CDC had perpetrated violence against our people. And we have made clear that moving forward, we will use every means possible to protect the lives of our supporters and well-wishers, since the police has not been able to provide such protection for us.
Mr. Ali, let me ask you, because the CDC says your party ignored their campaign schedule and you went ahead to schedule your event. Where is the truth?
This is a complete lie. In the first place, when you have campaign activities, the Elections Commission will inform the other parties. But besides that, we were not involved into district-wide campaign activities. Our activities were confined at our campaign headquarters. Even if the CDC was having a program, that could not have interfered with our activities. And it is a clear indication that no party or supporters of other parties are to interfere with activities of a particular party at their headquarters. This is the second time that the CDC has encroached on our headquarters and they have brutalized our people. And that's why we want to make emphatically clear that any form of violence against our supporters, our well-wishers, our sympathizers, we will protect our peoples.
Muhammad Ali is the official campaign spokesperson for the Opposition Unity Party of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, August 11th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Amid the humanitarian crisis in Sudan, aid donors have provided some $1.5 billion in assistance. Nonprofit groups working in the conflict areas say that funding is not adequate and the shortfall is causing major challenges. Meanwhile, those fleeing Sudan say the humanitarian response in neighboring countries is so bad that they are returning home. Reporter Henry Wilkins looks at why this is happening.
Anai Wuol is one of hundreds of thousands who have fled Sudan in recent weeks, escaping the conflict, which is tearing the country apart. He describes conditions in the capital, Khartoum. He says the conditions people are going through in Khartoum are extremely bad, and many want to get out but can't do so because of the financial difficulties of finding money for transport. Yet some of those who have already fled here to Renk in neighbouring South Sudan say the conditions are so bad they want to go back to war-torn Sudan. Abouk Tayem, a South Sudanese returnee, says many people are returning to Sudan out of hunger and the lack of other basic needs. It's mostly hunger that drives people to go back to Sudan. If we're provided with food, healthcare and tents to shelter in, then there won't be any need for us to go back. VOA spoke to others who said they planned to go back and to community leaders who said that some people have already returned to Sudan. Non-profits have complained that the $1.5 billion in humanitarian funding pledged since Sudan's war started in April represents only around half of what's needed and will cause problems in responding at scale to the crisis. Mark Wood, a program associate at the advocacy group Refugees International, says donors are reluctant to work with unfamiliar local NGOs in Sudan and won't give them funding.
It is heavily frustrating for us in the humanitarian field and humanitarian space to see Sudan not getting as much attention as it should. But we encourage donor nations to be more flexible with their funding and to not be as stringent and to, you know, put aside the bureaucratic red tape and be more flexible with their funding and so that they can address what is actually happening on the ground in real time.
David Del Conte, a humanitarian and policy consultant, says the international community was not fully prepared for the intensity of the war in Sudan and the humanitarian crisis it would trigger.
That led to a rather myopic look at how much funding would be needed for the situation. I think the international community can start putting pressure on the parties, stop cutting off the income source of the parties, stop cutting off the trade routes for the parties to force the parties to the table. And that really hasn't been done in a meaningful way.
Experts also cited donor fatigue, which has been especially pronounced since the pandemic caused countries to look inwards, as well as the continuing Ukraine crisis. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Renk, South Sudan.
A Human Rights Watch Africa researcher says not one individual has been held accountable since videos and photographs circulated on social media showing South Sudan government forces executing captured fighters from an armed opposition group in the country's unity state. Human Rights Watch is calling on the government to hold soldiers responsible for last year's extrajudicial killing of rebel soldiers in Mayom County. Lucy Pony reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The killings took place during counterinsurgency operations launched by the governor of Unity State in August last year, following reported attacks by the South Sudan Patriotic Movement, or SSPM, in which 12 people were killed, including the county commissioner of Mayom. Human Rights Watch Africa Division researcher Nyago Atut says, despite the army investigation of the extrajudicial killings and reports submitted to the presidency, the army's findings have never been made public.
We acknowledge the fact that South Sudan People's Defense Forces at the time in August launched its own investigation. We have not seen the findings of that investigation. They handed over their report to President Salva Kiir at the end of August last year. President Salva Kiir proceeded to establish an investigation committee, which looked into the various incidences around both the attack on the villages as well as on the killings of these fighters. Since that time, it is not clear how extensive the mandate of the committee was, what information they were able to gather, and what has happened to that investigation.
Speaking to VOA South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says the government investigations into the Mayom killings are not finished.
They are taking our measures and we are continuing with the measures. This is a big case that needs thorough investigation and trial. We cannot put the cart before the horse and start talking of the measures that we are taking at a time when we are continuing with the legal proceedings.
Nyagwa says Human Rights Watch findings make it clear that army soldiers and national security officers were involved in the killings.
Our findings show the involvement of South Sudanese soldiers as well as a national security officer, some soldiers who were uniformed and a few others who were wearing plain clothes. It was very clear from the video footage that at least three of the individuals were shot on the spot and may have died as a result.
Nyagwa says previous committees commissioned to investigate such cases have operated in secrecy and their reports rarely made public. She says governments are obliged under international law to appropriately prosecute apparent war crimes.
And so what happens is that it emboldens people who are responsible to continue conducting these violations. And so the trend of impunity tends to continue because there's no action to hold people to account.
Human Rights Watch says such cases underscore the need for South Sudan's government and the African Union Commission to finally form the hybrid court for South Sudan as laid out in the 2018 peace deal to prosecute the most serious human rights violations. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the commencement of the 2023-2024 football season across Europe. In England, many African players will be on the roster of many English Premier League clubs when the season begins on Friday. Here are some African stars in the EPL you should keep an eye on this season. Taiwo Awoniyi plays for Nottingham Forest and is from Nigeria. Saeed Brahima, who plays for West Ham United, is from Algeria. From South Africa is Leah Fuster, who plays for Burnley, while Alex Iwobi, who plays for Everton, hails from Nigeria. Nicholas Jackson from Chelsea is a Senegalese. Brian Umbiamo from Brentford is a Cameroonian. Andre Onana, another Cameroonian, will be donning his jersey for the Red Devils. Dango Ouattara from Burkina Faso plays for Bournemouth, while Thomas Partey from Ghana plays for Arsenal. And certainly one star a lot of Africans will like to see him shine this season will be Mo Salah from Egypt, who plays for Liverpool. The official draw of the CAF Women's Champions League CASAFA qualifiers was conducted on Thursday, with some interesting outcomes for the 8-team tournament set to take place in Durban between the 30th of August and the 8th of September. Reigning champions Green Buffaloes of Zambia headline Group A, which consists of Double Action Ladies of Botswana, Lesotho Defence Force, as well as Ntopa FC of Malawi, who make their maiden appearance in the tournament. Inaugural champions went on to claim the 2021 CAF Women's Champions League title. Mamelodi Sundowns carry the favourite tag in Group B, where they will be up against Olympic de Moroni of Comoros, Costa do Sol of Mozambique, as well as Eswatini's Young Buffaloes. The top two teams from each group will advance to the semi-finals to determine the two teams that will battle it out for the single spot reserved for the CASAFA region at the CAF Women's Champions League, set to take place in Cote d'Ivoire between the 5th and the 19th of November. The Confederation of African Football is investigating allegations of improper conduct made against Samuel Eto'o, president of the Cameroonian Football Federation, FECAFOOT. Last month, a group of amateur clubs in Cameroon called on Eto'o to resign, citing what they described as grave irregularities and calling for Cameroon's sports minister to intervene, as well as mentioning the possibility of asking FIFA president Gianni Infantino to do same. And now to basketball, where Nigeria will host other African basketball teams in the pre-qualifiers in a journey to the Olympic Games in Paris. The FIBA Pre-Olympics Africa qualifiers will be held at the Echo Hotel and Suites, Lagos, from August 12th to August 20th. The participating teams that will slug it out for a coveted spot to represent the continent at next year's Olympic Games are Senegal, Mali, Uganda, Congo Democratic Republic, Cameroon, Guinea, Tunisia, and host Nigeria. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte, Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We will see you again on Monday morning.